Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. Today is episode 141 with the title, No Expected Outcome. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Steph Van Haverbecker. And that's not easy to say a Flemish name as an English person. Steph is the co-founder of the House of Coaching. She empowers professionals with cognitive agility and inclusion-driven strategies to thrive in a rapidly changing world. And when I asked Steph to describe her superpower, she said that it is her empathy and self-confidence, enabling her to deeply understand unique challenges and empower individuals to uncover their strengths. Hello, Steph. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. It's great to be here.
Absolutely fabulous. And how did I do on your name? Did I get it close?
It sounded perfect.
Thank you.
And I know it's hard.
It is. It's the Dutch language is a law unto itself, isn't it? With lots of guttural sort of throat noises, isn't it?
It comes from deep within.
Deep within, yeah. I've got many Dutch friends and I've been to that part of the world many times. And we sit in bars and laugh about pronunciations and things. And
I know. So
So Steph.
You were doing great, yes.
Thank you. So Steph, tell me more. No expected outcomes. What's all that about?
Yeah, well, it's something that I realized a few months ago, beginning of this year. We're now December of 2024, and past year, so in 2023, post-COVID, my main business, my main activity suffered from the COVID pandemic and went bankrupt. So that meant that I had to reinvent myself, reinvent my business. In Dutch, we have this beautiful word. It's called doorstart. So it's starting through. It's not starting again, but making a true push. Something through the troubles, through, and at the same time I was going through my gender transition as well. So this meant there was a whole lot of stuff going on at the same time, and at one Friday morning beginning this year, I had this long list of things that I needed to do, and I sat in front of my computer like I'm sitting here now. And I was watching its screen and just a whole list of emails and all, all that feeling, too much to, and you want to get through it. And then my eye fell on this synthesizer that I got for my birthday and I was still wrapped. It was one of my old passions to make music. And I said, come on, let's unwrap this thing. And I hooked it up and I played music the whole day. And what I noticed is that by doing this, by shifting my focus away from, the result-oriented tasks that I needed to do, I felt energized, I felt inspired, I got back into flow, and I was able to do that list of tasks in just maybe an hour or so afterwards, just because I refound my energy by making a small decision, actually. And that's what this neo or no expected outcome. That's what it is about.
So that's quite a challenging journey you've had there. So a complete reboot.
Yeah.
But so you had no expected outcome from that, but you knew what wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
You just weren't sure what would work. Is that kind of fair?
Yeah. No, it is. No, I reflected a lot afterwards. After that particular Friday, I went that Friday evening. I went walking with my dog in the park here, and just right in front of my house. And as I was walking, I reflected on what happened. And it doesn't seem like a lot happened, but it was for me. It was very profound because I was, you know, I'm a person who was always, you know, out there putting the foot on the pedal and full throttle, plow through. And just by making that small decision to take a step back, to do something that I'm passionate about, being creative a whole day and having no expectation about this, not having the sense of guilt, I need to do this or this will get me in trouble. So there was no guilt involved. Mm-hmm. So it freed me. It set me free, actually. And then as I was walking my dog, this word came to me, no expected outcome. I had no outcome that I was expecting from that day. I let it go. And that meant that I was able to re-energize myself. And yeah, and that's something that I discussed with a lot of people since. And I found that...
Presumably, when you were going up to this period, you must have had a lot of apprehension, fear,
mm-hmm.
nervousness, all these kind of words, of limiting beliefs, things holding you back.
Yeah.
Was there a particular defining moment that you remember that was the key to the lock that allowed you to move forward?
It was a conversation with a friend, and I was talking about this, my experience, and we were sitting in this coffee shop, drinking a cup of coffee and having a sandwich, and I was discussing, you know, just talking about my experience, and then he said, you know, this is so recognizable because, you know, I'm also somebody who's really, you know, focused on, you know, result. I have to do this. I have to do that. I need to do this. And it needs to be perfect. And this and that. And as he was describing this, he burst into tears. He said, this is, you know, he said, this, your story is also my story because I have the same experience, but I'm not able myself to do this, to do what you did. And it's such a simple thing. It's making a decision. But they said, I know from myself, I won't be able to do this because I have this sense of, you know, if I would do this, first of all, I don't know if it would work for me. And second of all, yeah, would I be able to allow myself to make such a decision? And I thought, you know, WTF, what is going on here? How are we programmed that we have to perform every day? We are robots and we have to be economically, you know, a piece of the machinery. I mean, that we don't allow ourselves this small freedom to be creative when we want.
Would you, looking back on it, would you say that COVID created the challenge with your business, which created the bankruptcy, which then empowered you to gender transition? Or do you think it was kind of a bit of everything?
It was a bit of everything. It's not, I did not transition because of COVID. No, that has been part of me for a way longer time. But it gave me that was something maybe that was an element that it gave me the time to reflect on things. And that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I reflect on some of my own history and my own experience that once a momentum is in progress. You know, you've got some movement on change. I'd almost felt that the need to just change everything rather than change a bit, because you think you come back to it and you just pick at the edges. You've got to cut deep and cut really efficiently into your life and say, hang on a minute, this isn't working in all these different aspects. And if you're going to change something, you might as well just give it a go.
Yeah, there's something there, of course. This kind of This is a kind of change that is profound because it's about your identity, and your identity determines so much. It's the very, very, very small things. It's not only the big things. It's not only about how you present yourself or how you, what are you going to wear today. It's part of it, but it is not that. It goes so much deeper. And of course, COVID played, it gave me the opportunity, to do this in kind of my own tempo, my own pace. That's true. So in that sense, yeah.
So we'll talk a bit more about your coaching and what you're doing now, but can I just ask you a couple of kind of questions around, you're living in Belgium. You mentioned to me before we kicked off, what's the climate for you as a transgender woman? You know, we see what's going on in the US. We see what's going on. You probably see what's going on in the UK. I have very little knowledge around what it's like to be a transgender person in mainland Europe. How does it feel to you?
Well, I feel very lucky because in Belgium, we have one of the most progressive legislation around gender and gender equality and gender. You know, that you can simply, as a Belgian citizen, you can simply go to the, how is it called, the city hall, to the administration, and just state, this is now my gender, and that's it. And they have to change everything legally just because you are making that statement. So it's very easy. There's in Belgium, they decided that there shouldn't be any hurdles because that would be discriminatory. Yeah. Yeah, that's a difficult word for me as a Flemish. Yeah. So, and in that sense, we are very lucky. And in terms of society, when I made public that I was transitioning, I got nothing else than encouragement and people who appreciated what I was doing and found it very courageous and things like that. So that's even in my, it starts in my own family, of course, my wife, my daughter. My wife is a little bit a different story, of course, because we were not married as a woman with a woman. We were married as a man with a woman. So, and that's still something, of course, we have to work on every day. Because it rocks the core of your foundation of your relationship. But in a broader sense, you know, within my family, with my coworkers, my clients, yeah, it was very, they welcomed it almost. And yeah, that's, I don't say that this is the experience for everyone in Belgium, but I built my life already in such a way that I surrounded myself with people and also what I do as a profession in a way that people would just, that there wouldn't be any resistance to that change, to my transition.
What was the biggest thing that surprised you around your transition?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, that, you know, the person who had the most trouble with all this in my life is me. Yeah, it took a whole long time before I made, before I decided, I have to do something about this. That took a long time. Of course, I'm 55 years old now. So meaning about 50 years ago, there wasn't much about gender, that wasn't something people thought about, just you're born in a certain way. You are therefore a girl or a boy, And there was no awareness around the topic, at least not in my family. Yeah. So I can imagine if I would have been born now, my life would be a whole lot different.
But in your coaching, you do now with working with individuals and organizations, what insights do you think that your gender transition has had in your insights you help people with?
It allows me to be more empathic. As I said, the first person I had to deal with whole my whole transition was myself. I was the first person who needed to accept this, that this was a reality. And so now I'm very more aware when people come with whatever issues that they have, I'm much more able to put myself in the other shoes and have a real sense of, you know, what is going on. And of course, I'm not only able to be more empathic, but also more authentic. And I can truly speak from my heart now, whereas before I always had this kind of a shield, you know, you project a persona to the outside, which is inauthentic, and it felt wrong. So
expected outcome strategy, your mantra, if you like. We as humans, we have our biases, we have our preconceived ideas, and we bring all these baggage with us, don't we, with these outcomes. How do you work with people to get them to, if you like, let go of the baggage and start to see possibilities?
There's difference between baggage and luggage. So I like to have some luggage with me, but not the baggage. And that's how I also, you know, this is my frame when people come with me with whatever baggage they have. And it's like, what is in there that could be transformed into something else that would be useful for you? What I found is that the greatest hurdles that people deal with in those experiences lies the root of the solution. Like we just said, because of COVID, I had all these troubles, but also because of COVID, it created this opportunity for me to look at the world in a different way and to experience something that maybe otherwise I would have never experienced. So there's always, you know, this coin that has two sides. So what I do is when I have a coaching client, I'm not only asking, you know, questions and, you know, what are your goals and what are your resources and blah, blah, blah. But it's like a journey. I look at it as a journey and an exploration where people can discover parts within them that maybe the would have rejected somehow in the past, but now are able to give it a place and see it as a resource. And maybe I'll give an example. Someone last said, you know, I'm having trouble relaxing. I'm always in my mind, busy, 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 busy. And I find it very hard to create the mental space that I need to feel at ease, to be myself, actually. And so what we did, we did a little exercise, and it's kind of a imaginatory journey that you make in your own landscape. It's called mindscaping. And during that exercise, which is a guided meditation / hypnosis, it's a bit of both. And it's very metaphorical. It's kind of a guided dream almost. And then there was this girl that came to her, and she says, she's perfection. This girl is perfection. And she offers me a flower. And the moment she got that flower, she burst into tears and she said, okay, I see the beauty of it, but I also see that the flower is cut. So even though the flower is perfect, it is not perfect. So there's this whole duality there. And that changed the way she looks at the world now. And now she's able to see that perfection, you know, it is elusive. It is something that you can appreciate and you can strive for. But at the same time, you know, perfection is also something you can let go. And it is, yeah.
They often say that, perfection is the enemy of progress, you know, because we're so busy trying to get everything completely right, completely okay. And sometimes good enough is good enough, isn't it?
It is. It is. And just last weekend, I facilitated a conference for visual practitioners, which are people who are helping organizations to, you know, solve problems, be more creative, brainstorm, teach, and all these kind of things. So I was facilitating this, and people had to draw on big sheets of paper, you know, what their intention was for the day, for themselves, for each other, and so on. And so as we were, as a group, with about 40 people, drawing on a big sheet of paper about 10 meters wide with all kinds of colors and making drawings and putting on some slogans and whatever. And one of the participants came up to me and she said, you know, this is so amazing and so beautiful. It is something to really hold on to. And she said, you know, what is going to happen with this piece of this big sheet of paper after the conference? And I said, you know, I look at it as a mandala. It only exists here and now in this moment. And it exists for you, and it will still exist afterwards in your heart because you have experienced it. But after this, the paper will be gone. You know, we will tear it up and put it in a bin. And she said, that's, you know, she had some struggles with that idea, but it is beautiful. It is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because,
you said just now that you, the difference between luggage and baggage, I thought that was a really good analogy there, where we often feel like we're carrying around baggage. So what we need to do is we need to unpack all of our baggage and extract the valuable parts, the luggage.
Yeah.
And jettison those baggage elements. So we're traveling lighter with stuff we need, not bogged down with everything we don't need.
Indeed. And just to reflect for the listener also, just ask yourself this question. What is holding me back? What do I keep dragging behind me, like every day, that I maybe don't need? Or maybe there's something in there that is of real value. Just when I look at it in a different way and it becomes lighter and it becomes something that is useful for you. And it's not holding you back.
Most of the change we actually need is within ourselves, isn't it? You said earlier, what was the biggest surprise? What was the biggest barrier? Is yourself, holding yourself back. And what we find is we become our own limiting belief, our own perfectionist, or we become constrained by our own beliefs, don't we? And that's what we need to unlock sometimes. Because if we don't take a step forward, we'll always stand still. And it's trying to work out, find that bravery or that, or realizing we're more uncomfortable by being where we are than we would be by moving forward.
Indeed. For instance, for me, I've always felt that when I was before my transition, I had to prove myself. I always had the sense, you know, I have to prove myself that I am a man. I found that very hard, by the way. It took a lot of energy from me because it didn't feel natural, for obvious reasons. And once I let go of that, it transformed me. And now I feel free. I feel a lot lighter. I feel a lot more comfortable. And I couldn't really be myself in front of a whole group. Whereas before, I always felt like I had to put on an act. And that is, you know, that part of me was the baggage, but it also had the roots because it brought me on this journey to really explore and investigate and find out what was going on and to learn a whole lot about how the brain works, about psychology, even though I'm not a psychologist. But, you know, and I pushed myself, you know, learning and teaching about this, you know, in front of groups of people as a trainer and as a coach. And this really enabled me to let go of a lot of things, but also to transform and reintegrate some parts of, you know, not only the science and the knowledge that we have about, you know, what it means to be human and, you know, and about gender and all these things, but it also helped me to integrate on a deep, deep, deep level the experience that I had. I wouldn't be the person that I am today without that experience. It is the foundation of my confidence today. So,
I mean, I think it's fair to say that many people don't understand about being trans, gender non-binary, or having a gender identity that is not as aligned that you were given at birth. So you said just now that you spent many, many years of your life trying to prove to the world you were a man, and you found that exhausting, tiring, and something that was making you feel uncomfortable. Do you now find the challenges having to explain what being transgender means, and having to maybe justify yourself as a woman to certain people?
I definitely don't have the sense that I have to justify anything. No. that's not the case. I had to justify before my transition. I don't have to justify anything now. So no. It set me free. And now I am able to really, let me tell with a concrete example. A few days ago with somebody, he was, you know, a good friend of mine. We were walking in the city. We had to pick up some things. He had to go to the printer to pick up some, some orders that he made. And when he was in the print shop, the owner of the print shop came in and said, "Hi, Carl, how are you doing?" And blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, they're making jokes and, you know, going in this typical male bonding things that I never understood. You know, I cannot grasp what that is. But now that I've transitioned and I am truly who I am, I can connect with people in such a better way. It goes way easier. It goes directly. There are no walls anymore. So there's no need to justify anything. Whereas, that's...
So you just are. There's no kind of discussion here. In the same way, I'm just a woman. You're just a woman. We just are. We don't feel the need to prove that.
To make it very blunt, if somebody would come up to me and challenge me on this, I would challenge the other person also on their identity. You know, it's the same thing. You don't challenge anybody on their, on parts of their identity. You cannot have any judgment about that.
You mentioned you're not a psychologist, but you did some working on understanding the brain and the its perception of the world. Do you want to give me a little bit more background of what you uncovered when you were going through that?
Well, what I found particularly interesting is, of course, what are the differences between male, female brains? Is there any science to really back this up? And what I found is basically there isn't really. Meaning that the brain changes as we grow older, of course. There are processes. The brain only becomes adult when we are about 25. And the brain doesn't deteriorate, in a sense that an older person could have a brain as healthy as a 25-year-old. If you do particular activities that keep your brain healthy. But in a natural flow of things, of course, the brain changes over time. Things become harder to remember and all these things. So the difference between... a brain of a 4-year-old and a 94-year-old are far greater than, of course, the brain between a man and a woman. And, and even saying that, of course, there are some differences that will be about the size and about, but you cannot generalize. I was during the conference, I'm from Belgium, and there were people there from Norway, Sweden, and Holland. I don't know if you ever looked at those people, but they are, my neck still hurts because I had to look up the whole time. So they are, even the women are, they have a lot more stature than I have. So it's not about size. It's not about, particular parts of the brain. It is more how we use our brain that makes the difference. Yeah. And so there's also some culture involved, this nature and nurture. But what I found was that the way I've used my brain my whole life is typical for a woman. The things that I was interested in, the things that caught my attention, the things that I, even though I do like Star Wars, but I've also found that a lot of women like Star Wars, so I'm not the exception here. So we have all these preconceptions about, male, female, about male, female bodies, how they should look, how they should be, about our brains, how they should work, how they shouldn't work, and so on and so on. basically the template is human and gender is a spectrum. You can believe it or not, but it's science. And just, you know, where are you on the gender spectrum? And for me, I found that being in the male part of the gender spectrum didn't work for me. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole concept of gender and roles and what you should like, what you shouldn't like, is all a social construct. We've made this stuff up.
We made it up.
We give labels to things like that's a man's thing, that's a woman's thing, that's a men should like this, women should like that. That's a man's toilet, that's a woman's toilet. We invented this stuff in the 21st century. Most of the stuff before that was role-based, based on what you were trying to do. And society has kind of enforced these rules without any, as a blanket approach, without any real understanding about how people see themselves in the world.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of the constructs that we hold as self-evident are very recent. Victorian age was an age where a lot of the social norms that we adhere to today, they not originated, but they became like the norm. And that's also something, being a transgender woman and having walked that journey, I consider myself in a privileged place because I can see certain frames that are just non-existent, that a lot of people believe about the world that are simply not true. So, I like to think outside the box.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, again, going back to your experience of doing a diversion halfway through your life or three-quarters of the way through your life, wherever you want to look at it, that you're able to put down the baggage, as you say, and pick the path that works best for you. Going forward, what do you believe is kind of the future for you and the world and the people you help?
I think we'll come into a time of particular challenges. We have the rise of AI. I mean, we're just seeing the first emergence of that, even though AI is much older than many people realize. But it will change the way we work profoundly. And it will put into question what makes us human and what makes us intelligent. You know, there will be a whole lot of philosophical ideas floating around about that one. But also for many people, they will also have to transition in a certain way. And society as well. So we face particular challenges. It's not I who's saying that. It's everybody who's working in that area sees that. And I think that my contribution being here on this planet today is to share some of my experiences and to also to teach people some of the principles and techniques, how to really leverage human intelligence and remind that, we are not robots. We are different from the AI and the bots. And if you have a tedious task to do today, go to ChatGPT or Claude and make use of AI and use it in a smart way. But also, when you are with people together, the stupidest thing you can do is to listen to one person and say, okay, he's right probably, or she's right probably, or whatever, and not challenge that. We are here today alive because we are able to communicate, to invent, to create, and also to think critically. And that is something that is a skill that should be taught from kindergarten upwards. Think critically. When you hear a politician, in Belgium, they had elections together with the European elections. So before the summer or at the beginning of the summer, we still don't have a government. And what these people show is profound lack of leadership. They are bickering, they are discussing about topics that really don't matter. And they are not able to come to an agreement that is not leadership, that is stupidity. And that's plain and simple. So we need to be very careful about what we believe about the world, what we do with our lives, and how we spend our days. And I'm here as the advocate. Spend your days wisely and do things that, you know, give you energy, that set you free, make you look to the world in a different way, but that helps you and the people around you. It's plain and simple.
Should we be scared about AI? I mean, we talk about masculine, feminine, non-binary, and AI truly is an it. It has no gender identity or concept of self. It's making stuff up based on patterns of old information. Yeah.
Yeah. It has no identity. We give it identity, but it has no identity. It still is a machine. Maybe someday, I don't know, but definitely not for the foreseeable future. But it resembles someone who has identity and personality and all these things, but it's not. So will it change the way we work? Most definitely. Will it take away jobs? Yes, of course. Will it create new jobs? Definitely. So the question is not, will I be without a job because of AI? No. The question is, how can you use that new tool to make your job better or to make your life better? So start using it. But in a smart way. And don't forget, you are not a robot. You are not a machine. You're a human being. So be smart.
Yeah, I mean, that's my view of AI. I'm a great believer in using it as an assistant, a tool, automation, for heavy lift. But it fundamentally, at this current time, as we say, December 2024, it doesn't have a soul. It doesn't have a conscience. It doesn't have feelings or empathy or love, any parameters and patterns. And you can often tell the difference between an AI-generated picture or content, unless it's been heavily crafted by someone who gives it and injects it a personality and soul. It can appear very empty and heart without a center, without a heart.
Mm. Yeah. So, but so we face this huge change as a society. It will be very profound, and we will start to feel the thing is. A few weeks ago, I was giving this presentation about the impact of AI. Somebody from the audience asked, you know, in our company, there's a discussion. Should we start to implement AI? What is your take on that? And I said, well, you're asking the wrong question. Oh, it's not about should we. It's not even about you know, how or when. It is, you know, what can AI do for us today? And when you look at AI, what it can do, the answer is obvious. It can help you. It can serve you in amazing ways to boost your productivity, to really set your people free. And we will give a small example. In one of the organizations that I'm working with, they started to implement AI. They have offers coming in and documents in various formats, PDF, you know, and they have to OCR it and all that, these things. And it's still quite a manual job because of the different formats. They started to use AI for that and create a workflow. And now it goes all automatically. And the role of the people from that department changed from processing data to building client relationships, which AI cannot do. Yeah. So it's obvious. Will it change? In a sense, it will make it more human, but only if we choose to. So
if we look back at human history, you know, we go out, I don't know, 30, 40,000 years, about the time where Homo sapiens became the dominant human species beyond the Neanderthals and the other variants of human evolution. We were living of the moment. We were hungry, we'd catch something, we'd eat it. And then we mechanized, we created agriculture. We started keeping animals as livestock, as food for the future. We started planting plants and cultivating. Yeah. So we took control over our destiny by not having to live the moment. And of course, we industrial revolution, mechanizing boats, ships, aeroplanes, tools, engines, petrol, etc. We've created all these things over time. AI is just another evolution of a tool, along with computing and other devices, mobile phones, internet, satellites, GPS. It's another tool that will displace existing methods and technology and work and replace it with different paradigms, won't it?
Of course. You know, like, let's make an analogy. Before we had washing machines, women had to spend hours, you know, rubbing clothes in fresh water with soap, with their hands, in order to clean the clothes. Because of the washing machine, women were set free. And it seems like, what? Yeah. But my mother, when she was young, when she had to go from her town to the city, it was on with a horse and some carts. It took him half a day, one way trip, you know, on hobbly roads, yeah. Paths. You know,
we still see people in many parts of the world who have to walk for half a day to collect water and walk half a day back again with the water.
Yeah.
You know, irrigation, sanitation.
So, yeah. So technology serves, of course. Can technology be used against us? Oh, most definitely. Yeah, like everything. You know, a tool for chopping wood can be used to kill somebody. So we have to be very smart about this tool and really think about, you know, how we will use it to benefit us. And to reflect also on, you know, what does that mean for us as humans, the way we work, the way we earn money, it will be different. You can see that already happening. So
it's exciting. I'm excited by it. It's one of the few things that I think, if only I was 20 again, the technological leaps and bounds that are occurring right now in the world, I want another 50 years of this. I mean, I'm a bit older than you, not much. I'm thinking, hang on a bit, by the time this gets really exciting, I'll be in my 70s. I want another go. I want to go around again. Yeah.
Well, it's life is a mandala.
We as a species, as a society, as a family, we're growing and evolving all the time. And I guess, you know, if I had my life again, I'd be wanting the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
Like, you're a podcaster. Could you have imagined, like, 5 years ago or maybe 10 years ago, it didn't exist?
No, and the ease, yeah. You know, we're using a platform now called Riverside, which has AI technology. It helps produce show notes. It will clean the audio up, take the clicks and knocks out of it. And when I first started this, I was going into tools and having to clean up the audio myself. I'd have to hire someone to read through, listen to the episode, transcribe it for me semi-manually. And, yeah, I can turn a show around now in 20 minutes, half an hour, whereas it would take me half a day before. So huge leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
It's making the podcasting accessible. I can also generate assets for YouTube and bouncing audiograms and other things. When this episode goes out, you'll be able to access this on YouTube with a bouncing audiogram as well. So, yeah, lots of tools out there.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that part of the future. I mean, I'm less excited about some of the other trouble we've got in the world, you know, the rise of the conflicts that are developing between certain parts of East versus certain parts of the West. And there's some North-South issues. There's poverty, there's eco, climate change, extremist views dominating the world, fueled by social media, by media bias. And you think, well, hang on a minute, we're creating a more enlightened society, but with all these flashpoints, all these triggers that are there.
Yeah. Well, I like to see myself as someone who has a positive impact on people. And that's why I teach, I coach, I talk. And people, you know, for me, it's all about a human connection. You know, in essence, it's about, you know, us and, you know, what we are doing here on this planet. And my small contribution to that is every time I see somebody struggling with something, to maybe open a door in their, metaphorically in their mind, where they can see a new path, something else that they hadn't seen before. And one by one, person by person, if I can see that happening, that That gives me a sense of purpose. For me, I'm 55 years old. I'm here to prepare the next generation. So the people usually who come to my training courses are late 20 until early 40, usually. So these people have to do it for the moment. They have to pick up those tools. They have to pick up those skills as well. They have to do things differently than their predecessors. And they have also to be able to challenge their predecessors, even if they are their bosses. And it's a bold statement, but it is necessary.
If you were going to give our listener some advice, what is the one top tip you'd like to leave them with as a result of our conversation today?
The top tip, based on what we discussed, is think again. When you hear something, when you see something, really do the research. Make sure that you make wise decisions. Be knowledgeable. You know, you hear sometimes people say, you know, things are not what they seem to be. And then, you know, this is a whole conspiracy. Well, there is a conspiracy. And the conspiracy only lives inside your head. You know, the conspiracy is we are the system and we can change it. And so you can change it. So think again, be smart, be knowledgeable.
Believe everything you hear and see, because it's a deep fake with media bias, with people's bias. Yeah, you're right. We've got to challenge why people are trying to say something or what they're really trying to tell us.
Yeah. Excellent. News is a product.
Yes, or if you're the product, someone's trying to sell
sometimes
to you.
Sometimes you are the product, yes.
Completely.
Yeah. So
how do people get hold of you, Steph? Yeah. If you want to track you down, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Well, I have this very, 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 very tiny, tiny, tiny website with only one page on it, and it's coachsteph.live, and that's Steph with double F. So coachsteph.live. And there you find all the inroads to what I do and where you can see me or find me or reach me.
I just clicked on that link now. Let's have a quick look. Yep, it's coachsteph.live. Blue background, there's a picture of you in the middle. And you got some audio books on there. Is that you've got a free book, have you? Yeah.
So I got some books there. And also I would like to offer, based on our discussion, I will create a small guided meditation, like we discussed, kind of a guided dream that will help your listeners, so that you as a listener, to open your minds and to get smarter. So I'll put that together and we'll put it on a link. So coachsteph.live/inclusionbites.
I'll put that in the show notes as well, so that we can signpost it easily for people who are not quite got to the end of the podcast. Maybe they've nipped off for a coffee halfway through and forgot to press play again.
Who could do that? Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. Or sidetracked.
It's been an absolutely fascinating conversation, Steph. I've really enjoyed meeting you, getting to know you and hearing some of your thoughts about the world. And it's a lot of what you're saying resonates deeply with some of the things that I went through when I gender transitioned coming up for 10 years ago. And the challenges I had with my wife, my children and my work and my colleagues and things. Yeah, the world's changed in the last 10 years, some of it for the better, some of it, I'm not going to say for the worst. It's just different, just different. It's a different colour. That's what I want to say to it. Nearer the brown than it is the sunny, but but yeah, it's different. Thank you. It's been absolutely fascinating. So thank you for listening in this far.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. If today's discussion struck a chord, consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.